Dead characters do not yield spin-offs.
You are the Yoda of abdominal tumors.
This is serious business.
We have survived the con yet again, and this is Serious Business, the drunkest, nerdiest podcast on the planet. My name is Rob, and tonight we are here to tell the tale of San Diego Comic-Con 2015. Last year, John and myself attended, and back we went this year and have returned with glad tidings. Some are glad, some are not so glad. We'll be talking about what we did there. More importantly, some of the news that came out of the convention, particularly with some of the movie trailers that were very exciting, or maybe not so exciting. Before that, let's catch up with our SDCC veteran, John. John, you survived.
I did.
It's been a while. I don't think we've talked since Age of Ultron. That was That was quite a while ago. But you're good. You're hanging in there.
I
left you at Comic-Con and just kind of said a little prayer and you survived. So I'm glad to see you made it out alive.
Me too.
Opening question. Let's talk about weird moments. I was shocked, actually, this year that you reminded me that you have now been at Comic-Con for 5 years in a row.
Yeah.
That's correct.
This was my fifth one, yeah.
That's crazy to me. It basically means we're getting old. Yeah, it's really the takeaway there.
Time is flying alarmingly fast.
What has been the weirdest thing that you have seen at Comic-Con?
This year or just
nope. All 5 years.
I mean, one thing that comes to mind is I went to the bathroom once and there was a guy that was putting on his Ninja Turtles costume.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like a full on, it was sort of like a replica. It was in the style of the original live action movie from 1990.
Oh yeah.
And this
guy
had like
the big rubber suits.
Yeah. This guy had like a giant hockey bag and like a giant rubber shell, and he's putting on like leg pieces, and you know, there's the giant rubber head, and it's just like, you know, the bathroom's crowded as it is, there's lines, and this guy is just like, you know, out there. So I guess that was one of them. Another thing, actually, the exclusives, the doors open and these people start sprinting through like it's Black Friday, and the security guards are, you know, no running. So you see these people like cut down to this like vigorous, determined speed walk.
You're right.
You see these lines form in the blink of an eye. And then afterwards, you see people pushing like giant bags of stuff through the convention hall.
Right, right. Yeah. I was in the crush of one of the Marvel exclusives last year in the Marvel booth. And yeah, that wasn't pleasant. That wasn't pleasant. So I definitely know what you mean. And I do like moments of sort of the fourth wall of the Comic-Con breaking down when you see people like really struggling with their costumes and stuff. Those are sort of the moments I live for. So I enjoy your bathroom Ninja Turtle story as well. What, if anything, are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking the last bit of alcohol in the house. Apothic red wine.
Oh, wow. Wow.
About a glass.
Okay.
And that's about it. So,
classing it up for Comic-Con.
Yep.
Weird stuff. I should have asked this because I don't know if I have an answer either. But I do have a distinct memory from last year where I was walking upstairs. Right in the middle of the floor was like an infant. An infant in a Spider-Man costume. Like, not like a Spider-Man hood or anything, or a hoodie, but like a full-on, like stretchy face-covered costume. And this kid, couldn't walk and was just sort of like lumbering, like on the tile, totally unsupervised. Like, where was this kid's parents? And I stopped because I was like alarmed, and I looked around and there was like no one even looking at this kid. Kind of a dark ending to this story. I just kind of walked away. I figured that there was supervision somewhere, but that was my weird moment of Comic-Con. Hopefully that kid is, you know, two now and healthy and alive. But there's a weird you know, there's such a crush of people at Comic-Con, and, you know, outside of the panels and even outside of the floor, there are people just, like, languishing in lines and sort of, like, sitting down and, like, just trying to reclaim their humanity for a moment. And it's almost like a locker room sort of atmosphere. People have just sort of had it. And they do not care what they look like. Apparently, someone forgot their kid in the middle of all this. So that was a weird moment. And we talked
about... That qualifies.
To give just a little bit of context, last year, I met John at Comic-Con. I was alone because John has duties during Comic-Con. I was alone for most of my 2 days there. And that was weird, and I was unprepared for any of that. And
It's a strange environment.
It's a super strange environment. And yeah, especially be alone too, because there's no one you can even turn to sort of confirm that like things are weird or out of hand. You're just sort of staring and wondering, you know, where is there a different weird threshold here? And there is a Comic-Con, but you're also just sort of alarmed by, you know, just being dropped into that environment. This year, with, you know, 1 weekend under my belt, I returned for 1 day, and I felt like a Comic-Con expert. Like, the biggest difference, John, and I'm surprised you didn't, like, stop me last year. Like, when I showed up to Comic-Con, I met you there, and I had my wallet and my keys and my phone and, like, my clothes and, like, literally nothing else. And that is, like, not the way to Comic-Con. Like, you need, like, water. You need water. You need a bag to, like, hold stuff. You need a snack. There are supplies that you need to properly Comic-Con that I did not have that first go-around. And I had those this time. And also, I mean, I'm just going to jump into what our experience this year was like. I don't know. I felt a little paralyzed the first time I was here just because there was so much to do. And you're kind of standing there and you're being like, you know, bumped by a bunch of people and you're trying to decide like, okay, what do I spend my time doing? I have to get everywhere on foot. Do I need to commit to a line? Do I need to, you know, sometimes there are competing, you know, time slots for, you know, multiple things you want to go to. And it's hard to make like critical decisions in that environment and actually make the most of your time there. This year, I don't know, like I knew, like, the floor could wait, and I knew, you know, there were, like, two things that I really wanted to go to, and I was able to go to those things, and I was just there for a day this year, and I just was, like, went in with, like, military precision and, like, did the things that I wanted to do and left, and it was, like, very successful time. The first time was a bit of a culture shock, and but this time I just felt like I got in there and I got out, and, like, it was perfect. Was your early experiences with Comic-Con similar?
Yeah, actually, because even though I'm there every day, as you mentioned, I'm working it. So, you know, I only get a day, like one free day to myself. So, you know, I'm in the exact same situation where I have a day to play with. I'm glad to hear that, you know, you were able to plan things out and, you know, execute your plan. Cause that's always what I try to do. But my problem is I can never settle on what exactly I want to do.
Yeah.
But you know, you're absolutely right. You've got to go in there. Like when you only have a day to sort of do it all and you know, a day to play with,
yep.
It's extremely important to, you know, set your agenda and figure out the things that you absolutely want to do and be like, all right, I want to be in this panel at, you know, 10 and then I want to go to this panel at 2 so I can walk the floor between now and then. That's always the ideal plan. But like, I always like, a lot of times I set out for a plan and then I'm like, yeah, maybe I'm not going to, I don't, you know, I'll skip that panel and I'll walk the floor a little bit more, you know, like, or I'll go back to this booth and I'll get this book and then, you know. So I end up like changing my mind a lot and walking around a lot. Then the funny thing is like, you know, because I'm on my feet, you know, all 4.5 days working it on my day off, you know, I end up exerting myself even more just walking around all over the place. But I mean, doing a plan and, you know, making it, having your supplies is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, that's actually a good springboard for what we did this year, because I realized sort of late that there was the Batman panel happening with Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, and I had very limited time to get there. I rushed upstairs to the meeting room where that was happening, and I walked in and sat down in the second row. And that was surprising to me, because that's one of the hottest comic book tickets at Comic-Con. And I realized in that moment, like, what a sharp second place comic book stuff is now at Comic-Con. Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder were great talking about what were they doing with the Robo Bunny arc of Batman that's out right now, which I'm not actually reading. But it was really interesting to hear them talk about what they're doing. And actually, a lot of Greg Capullo's art process was really interesting. But I was sitting behind Greg Capullo's wife. I was really close. Like, I saw them walk in. I was, like, right by the little VIP section next to the stage. And you would have thought that, you know, I had been in line for an hour or whatever. But it wasn't the case. You know, for Hannibal, which I went to later in the day, I had to sit through a Grimm panel. I had to sit through an Outlander panel. These are television shows, apparently. I did not do not watch. But I had to like get in the room and stay in the room for, you know, 2 hours plus to be, you know, in the vicinity of the Hannibal people. Very distinct difference there. What did you actually end up doing at Comic-Con this year? I know that you you hit up Capullo at one point.
Yeah, I hit up Spotlight on Greg Capullo panel, which is basically, they have these for other artists and creators as well, where it's basically the format of the panel is like they'll focus on a particular artist or writer. On this particular panel, Scott Snyder was the moderator, which was a surprise.
That's great.
Like, I didn't know that until I walked in the room and saw, you know, Snyder and Capullo right there. I was like, oh, awesome. I walked in kind of late, so I wasn't able to get second row, but I mean, like, I could still very easily walk in and get reasonably close, you know, 10 minutes into the panel. And I think that's one of the good things about Comic-Con still, is that, like, you know, a lot of people complain how, like, oh, you know, like, the movies and TV have taken over, and it's all pop culture, it's not about the comics. But, like, the cool thing is, like, you can still get reasonably up close to, you know, some of the best creators in the business, and, you know, there's an opportunity to get up to the mic and ask Capullo a question. I didn't, because I was like, I literally couldn't think about it. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
like, I didn't know because I listened to so many podcasts where he's interviewed, and I've listened to a lot of his interviews. I feel like I know a lot
right
of the stuff about, so, like, I don't know, I had a hard time coming up with a good question. I wouldn't be like, you know,
yeah, in fact, when
later on,
yeah, when I was actually, when I was trying to, like, rub in your face that I got to the Batman panel and was so close, and was telling you about one of the details that they were talking about, which was so funny to me, you were like, oh yeah, that's they must have, like, a greatest hits, because they had sort of telling the same funny stories over and over again. But I was like, oh, damn it. Right. Yeah, so but it was cool to be there nonetheless. I want to talk real quick about the Hannibal, or the Panibal, as they called it. I'll tell you, it's weird to go to a Comic-Con panel where between scheduling that panel and the panel actually happening, the show gets canceled. So,
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually super curious about how that was going to happen. So, forgive me, because I'm going to not remember some of the people who were on this panel. There was Hugh Dancy, who plays Will Graham, Brian Fuller, who is the executive producer, showrunner of Hannibal. A marvelous human being. Was super fun. I was grabbing stuff, gifts and stuff from the audience. They were all wearing those flower crowns that, I don't know, it was like a Tumblr thing that took off. It's not part of the show. There's also the actor who plays the Red Dragon villain, who is coming up in the season that's canceled. And there was a producer there who, they made it sound like she was sort of like the keeper of the franchise. Like, she had maybe been involved with some of the movies prior to Hannibal. So she was actually, like, very interesting to have there. I wish more of the questions had been directed at her. But I just want to say, like, such a weird, like, bittersweet thing.
Yeah, all what was the vibe like in that place?
It was sad. It was really sad, I gotta say. Because, you know, at the time, and this may change by the time this episode goes live, but at the time of the panel, no, like, other venue had rescued Hannibal. Netflix had passed, Amazon had passed, and, you know, as of this recording, that's still the case. Brian Fuller mentioned maybe trying to do a movie, but, like, man, if you looked at a list of every canceled show that said that they want to finish up with a movie, it would be a mile long. So that's not exactly heartening to hear, even though it would be great. But, yeah, like, a lot of touching questions or just, like, thank yous and proclamations from fans, all of which who were dressed up as, like, murder victims. So that was also very funny. It was a very weird dichotomy of, like, heartfelt stuff and, like, just grisly stuff at the Hannibal stuff. Because they also played, like, a trailer for the second half of the season, an exclusive trailer, which was also, you know, dark and disturbing. But everyone was so, you know, gracious and happy. And, like, yeah, like I said, sad because, like, no indication that, you know, this was going to continue on. You know, a lot of the final questions were like, hey, if this doesn't, you know, work out, like, what is your...
The show wasn't canceled.
Yeah, the show wasn't canceled. Yeah. Yeah, there was a few of those, like, sort of like, hey, what would, what does season 5 look like or whatever? It's like, come on, let's not do that. That's just rubbing salt in the wound. But there are other questions that are like, you know, if this doesn't, you know, pan out, what is your favorite, you know, like, behind the scenes moment? And, like, at the end of the panel too, like, Hugh Dancy felt like he was getting a little misty eyed. It felt like they were preparing themselves for this being their sort of last hurrah together at Comic-Con. So yeah, so that was bittersweet. And I haven't been able to impart any of that to Kristen yet, who is traveling, and actually was tweeting at her because she's the big Hannibal fan here at This is Serious Business. In fact, our last episode was a Hannibal episode right before it got canceled. But yeah, you know, it's weird because this is the thing about Comic-Con. You get bombarded with the costumes and all the merchandise and everything, and you're just like, man, is this what, like, the fandom is? Like, even some of the panels, you can tell, like, oh, the actors don't even really take this stuff seriously. They're there because, you know, they have to be there, whatever. But this...
Contractually.
Yeah, they're obligated to be there. But for the Hannibal thing, it really did feel like it was getting at the heart of what makes sort of a community of fans happen. So that was nice. And I think actually the Hannibal panel put the day in a favorable perspective, contrary to last year, which I didn't get any of that stuff. So that was nice, a nice sort of like finishing touch to my day actually at the convention. So let's take a quick drink break. And when we get back, we're going to talk some of the trailers that came out of Comic-Con. Suicide Squad, we'll be talking in Star Wars, and we'll be talking Batman versus Superman. Or is it Superman versus Batman?
Batman versus Superman.
Okay.
Batman v Superman.
Yeah, alphabetical. We'll be back after this.
20 years in Gotham, how many good guys are left? How many stayed that way? He has the power to wipe out the entire human race.
And we're back, and we're here to talk about the trailers. You know, there is always a lot of news that comes out of Comic-Con, but the trailers have become the most exciting because they're exclusive for all of 5 minutes, and then they go on the internet, and then everybody flips out over them. And there were a number of them. This year, there was a big Star Wars one. I believe it was Friday. First full day at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I believe it was Friday.
So, and this was a behind-the-scenes trailer, which is a little different. It's almost like a Blu-ray featurette or something that they released ahead of time. So, I guess we'll take a look at that right now.
Real sets. Practical effects.
You've been here, but you don't know this story.
Nothing's changed, really. I mean, everything's changed, but nothing's changed. That's the way you want it to be, really. to see the way the technology has evolved, and yet keeping one foot in the pre-digital world.
We've talked about Star Wars before. Are you optimistic for these movies at all?
I am. I'm very optimistic.
You're very optimistic.
Yes. I mean, the last trailer especially, I mean, I was, like, super pumped. I mean, like, that's one of my favorite trailers of all time. It's just because it's, like, so much fun to watch, and it seems like, I don't know, it seems like it's, you know, old school Star Wars, you know, like, where it's all about, like, just a good old-fashioned swashbuckling.
Yeah.
As they highlight very heavily in this behind-the-scenes thing.
Right.
You know, there's a very strong resurgence of practical effects and puppets and real sets. So I think that that's a good sign. And, you know, J.J. Abrams seems like a pretty old school fan. So I think he's going to be, I think overall it's going to be a very respectful approach to the material.
What I wanted to bring up was the constant reiteration in this trailer about going back to practical effects, going back, bringing a physicality to the movies. I like, the whole trailer should just be called Fuck George Lucas, because, like, that's the only thing that they want to get across is the fact that this is not a prequel. The trailer that you're talking about, the last theatrical trailer that came out before Comic-Con, was impressive. I do think that J.J. Abrams, he is bringing a lot of that old school sort of iconic imagery with him in a way that feels good. I don't know what to say. I'm looking forward to it. This trailer sort of made me feel like we're really trying to placate everyone who's been whining about those movies for like the past 10 years, and like,
yeah.
I don't like those people who have been whining about the movie for the past 10 years, so this felt like you know, gift wrapped for them, and I'm like, oh, you guys, you won. You're gonna get your Star Wars movie that, you know, speaks to your man child dreams or whatever. But whatever. Like, I will see this movie. I do think, like I said, J.J. Abrams brings a visual strength to them. I love the cast. I am optimistic that Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Empire Strikes Back, he is co-writing it
and
with
Return
J.J.
of the Jedi.
Did he write Return of the Jedi too?
I just watched the trilogy recently, and I, to my surprise, I was like, oh, huh, I thought he just did Empire, but...
Yeah, so he's like a big veteran. But yes, I do think that the trailer is successful and that it shows that, you know, a lot of love and craft is going into these movies. And the, you know, more shots of the cast doing really cool stuff, more shots of the visualization that's going into the design and some of the set pieces. Yeah, I'm gonna see it. John, sounds like you're excited. More excited than me.
Yeah, I am.
So you will see that movie. All right, very good. So let's sidestep out of Star Wars and get into the DC stuff. So Suicide Squad, which is the directed by David Ayer. Ayer? Don't know how you say that.
It's Ayer.
For those of you who don't know, it's like a team of supervillains who sort of like organized by the government to do good things.
So is it like DC's version of Thunderbolts?
Yeah, that's what it's likened to a lot, and I am an obsessive Thunderbolts fan, so I'm kind of curious about what the appetite will be for Suicide Squad. But they released a finished trailer. All the characters that I recognize in Suicide Squad are from Batman. There's Harley Quinn, who's sort of, I think, the main character. There's Deadshot, played by Will Smith. And there's Killer Croc. He is also in it. But yeah, that's the concept. They released a trailer, finally. And so we'll play a bit of that right now.
You know what they say about the crazy ones?
Huh?
Oh, I'm not gonna kill you.
I'm just gonna hurt you. Really, really bad.
This is kind of a wild card movie. I mean, I was excited when DC announced it because, like, I'm glad that they jumped to like a fresh concept rather than, you know, trying to do, you know, Aquaman and right. Green Lantern again or something. Like they jumped to this, which I think is such a great move because it makes them distinct from Marvel almost immediately.
Right.
With this big property. What do you think of this trailer?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that like my impression, and I think the overall problem is going to be is that like I too didn't know any of the characters outside of the Batman characters,
right.
Mostly because like they're not too. I mean, like you have Harley Quinn, you have Killer Croc, which are very like broad, colorful, recognizable characters. But like all the other guys just seem like mercenaries with guns.
Yeah, no, it's you like, know, just it, like a...
it's very like one guy's got the skull tattoo. There's Katana. She's fairly, you know.
She's Asian. She's got so a gimmick. She has a sword. Yeah.
Yeah, and a mask.
Right.
So she stands out. But the other guys, it's just like they're guys in coats and guns. So it's like
that's what I was gonna say.
Are they a villain from another book or you know, like so it's I mean people know Harley Quinn for the most part. They know the Joker. But I mean I'm very curious as to what the mass public reception of a movie like this is gonna be. Even I feel like in terms of comic books, you know, I mean that's a good C or D list title, I think.
I think in recent years, it's moved from like D to C, mostly because of Harley Quinn.
Yeah, Harley Quinn.
And I think, you know, DC was, and Warner Brothers probably smart to be like, oh, we're going to have a female protagonist in a concept that's, you know, not mirrored by Marvel and at least yet, and, you know, we're going to do it up. This trailer, I'm such a downer. I'm not totally blown away by this trailer. I'm a little disappointed just because when I hear about this concept, I really want it to be like fun, and this trailer is just like. As an aside, can we just like we should just all agree that we need to take creepy like child choruses out of movie trailers? Like, can we please just do that because?
I would agree with
you on that one. It's getting ridiculous. I was so pumped for this to be, like, fun and wacky. You know, sort of irreverent in a way that's like, okay, I'm gonna follow... Yeah. And, like, this trailer is just like, no, these are, like, important, beautifully broken people. And, like, we must follow their story. And I'm like, oh, God, no, I don't want these characters glamorized. I want these characters to be sort of, like, just laid and bare, for, you know, warts and all. I don't want this to be like we're gonna find their nobility during this movie, and it's just like that's exactly what this movie is, or at least that's what the trailer communicated to me. And while visually it looked sort of like more sort of like rambunctious and chaotic than say Man of Steel, I don't know, the tone of it sort of just turned me off.
I would agree that it was very like grim, but it was also confusing. You know, because it's like
there's also that. Yeah, there was
they're bad guys, apparently the, you know, the worst of the worst bad guys. So then you start to wonder like who are they fighting, and you know, you see them going on missions, and it's who's the antagonist? We see the Joker, we see Batman. You know what I mean? So it's like
What I can surmise about the film is that Joker will be the bad guy, and he will be the person who keeps tempting Harley Quinn, you know, across the line between good and bad. That's what I think, because of their, you know, toxic relationship or whatever. That's what I would suspect it to be. I admit that the trailer doesn't necessarily communicate that, and I did find the trailer confusing too. And one of the things too that is risky, for DC and Warner Brothers, is that like when you do a book like Suicide Squad or you do a book like Thunderbolts, you're doing it within the context of the audience knowing who these characters are already and what they are capable of because they've already done like bad things in other books, and then you present them in this new context where you know they're you know going to be trying to do good things, and that you know creates so much intrigue and conflict in the story. With Suicide Squad the movie, we haven't like we're gonna see Joker in Suicide Squad before we ever see him like lay a hand on Batman.
That's the gamble that DC is playing right now, because Marvel took the easy approach, well, not the easy approach, right. But I mean, like, the straightforward approach, where it's like, we meet all these major characters separately,
on their own. Right.
Then they come together, we know their story, we know their motivations for the most part, we know what types of characters they are, so it's very...
Right.
But now, it's like, with the DC movies, the only character we know, if you want to call him a character, is Superman. You know, like, he's not...
Call him a character. Superman, and I mean, I know, and that's weird. I wonder what the marketing blitz will be for Suicide Squad, because they're going to have to really push Joker, and they're going to have to really push, like, the Batman. I imagine is going to be a cameo. He's already in the first trailer. Yeah. Like, they need to communicate the fact that these characters are in this world, but they're being brought together, not prematurely, but before we see them sort of on their own. I am very curious. I'm going to see this movie. But the approach confounds me a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think I agree with you. It's a ballsy move on DC parts, and I commend them for, you know, starting off. I don't know. I'm not gonna say it's a bad idea. I'm not gonna say it's gonna be terrible. I think it's too early to tell. But yeah,
I've characterized myself as too skeptical, because, like, I'm more interested in seeing Suicide Squad than I am, like, Infinity War. Like, I feel like I know what Infinity War looks like. There you have it, for Suicide Squad. And speaking of Superman and Batman, the big trailer to come out of Comic-Con.
Whopping
trailer for Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, the sequel to Man of Steel, both directed by Zack Snyder. Now, John, we both did not like Man of Steel a lot. A lot, in fact, that, like, I think I gave it my lowest rating I've ever given a movie on our podcast. I think I gave it half a star. Let's take a look at that right now.
That's how it starts. The fever. The rage that turns good men cruel.
This bat vigilante is like a one-man reign of terror. You don't get to decide what the right thing is. Nobody cares about Clark Kent taking on the Batman.
As I said, you and I both kind of disappointed with Man of Steel.
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Have you been hopeful about Batman versus Superman? Like, have the developments in, you know, the announcement and, like, the talent behind it, have that sort of, like, sweetened you on the deal a little bit? Or have you still been skeptical? No.
I mean, I like Ben Affleck, like, the casting of Ben Affleck as Batman, because he's such, like, a legitimate talent. So I thought, like, that was gonna...
Yeah.
Up the ante a little bit, and I still do kind of think that, but I don't know. I mean, my conflict is, like, I want so much for it to be good, you know, like, see a good movie with Batman and Superman in it, but I know all the signs are pointing to that it's just going to be Man of Steel.
I feel like where I actually felt genuinely moved by some of the Man of Steel trailers. I feel like this time around, maybe because of hindsight, or whatever, but I feel like the indicators of, like, all the things that I didn't like about Man of Steel are already in, like, the marketing materials for this movie.
Yeah.
And that feels, like, bad, because I too was like, oh, you know, Ben Affleck's going to be Batman. What an interesting choice. I like Batman a lot. I like Ben Affleck a lot. And he brought on Chris Terrio, who wrote Argo, which won an Academy Award. Another
encouraging.
Yeah, very encouraging. Like, you know, David S. Goyer maybe was a little to blame for some of the things I didn't like so much about Man of Steel. So if we...
That's what I'm hanging on to.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Chris Terrio is actually the reason, if I see this movie, that I'm seeing it. Because these trailers, to me, feel like, you know, the highlight reels of Man of Steel, where it's like, here are all the parts that don't work for me. We're finally getting Wonder Woman. We're getting, like, a very interesting casting with Lex Luthor. There are all these weighty ideas, not only, you know, that you can imagine with the concept of Batman versus Superman, but, you know, The Dark Knight Returns is, like, one of the most revered comics out there. And you can tell, obviously, that they're mining this comic visually, but I don't get any sense that, like, they're taking out things that made that comic so special.
No, I think I saw a little bit of the panel, the Batman v Superman panel. Just like it was on YouTube. It was like a 24-minute version.
I see.
Or maybe that was the whole thing, but it was like the highlights, or something. And Zack Snyder said, like, it's not based on Dark Knight Returns. It's just like him sort of
inspired by,
right, making little nods to Frank Miller. And they had that, you know, the Batman armor set up at Comic-Con. They had all four suits.
Oh yeah,
The two Batman suits and Superman.
They look
and
cool.
Wonder Woman.
They look super cool. Zack Snyder is such a visually oriented director. That's why Watchmen was so, at least at first, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of celebrated, because it's like, man, we've been sitting with this graphic novel or this comic series for so long. So much of his art has been iconic. And he nailed all that stuff. The same way they
did the 300.
They did 300. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is his hallmark. So he nails these things. But, you know, as you said, that's not the concern here. The concern is, like, I want to put together something that feels like a story. And it speaks to, you know, the reasons why we keep reading these books again and again.
I had this fantasy that I'm hoping that this is what happened.
Oh, tell me. Because I think initially, tell me a fantasy, John.
I think initially David Goyer was still, like, he was still attached to do this, the screenplay, to write it, right?
Oh yeah, I think he drafted the whole thing, like a whole version of it.
So then Ben Affleck comes on. And then he then brings on Chris Terrio, and David Goyer gets booted off. And then, like, Ben Affleck says, like, all right, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to bring on my guy, because we got to fix this, you know, like this. So Chris Terrio comes in, they work, and, basically restructure the whole thing.
Right.
And put these ideas in it, and it's much more of an original, cohesive story. Because, like, I think the one thing that gives me hope, the glimmer of hope that I think there is about this, is that, like, with Man of Steel, they were very deliberately trying to take the same approach as a Batman Begins. Whereas with this new one, it's sort of new ground. Like, they haven't really, they're not trying to ape anything in particular. I mean, like, even with Avengers, it's sort of a different thing. It's these two characters clashing idealistically as opposed to, you know, the whole team. So I'm hoping the issues and the ideas that we see in the trailer are going to be, like, really effectively explored.
There are a couple of things that I think are kind of encouraging. Like, the opening shot of this trailer, or the opening sequence, is Bruce Wayne running into, like, the 9/11, that's like, dust storm. Like, that is great. And that is, like, the perfect way to, like, enter the story. Because after Man of Steel, and we went over this at length, the destruction, for spectacle's sake, was to the point where it was, we cannot ignore the fact that, like, that you're saying, like, a city is your sandbox, and all of us in the audience are like, oh, this is kind of like, you know, probably people in those buildings. And it's Zack Snyder. This blows me away, too. Before, you know, the Batman versus Superman approach, they were not going to address that at all with a sequel.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until that they talked, you know, started to incorporate Batman, and it was just like, hey, maybe there's, like, fallout, due to the fact that, you know, this, you know, Superman saved us, but, you know, caused, you know, like, 12 9/11s in the process. So the fact that they're addressing that,
I think it's a very plausible conflict between the two.
Of course.
I mean, like, I don't know,
I feel like
where Superman's coming from,
I feel like if you're going to commit to doing this with the sequel, entering Batman, this is the perfect way to do it. One of those buildings was his. He has been retired or whatever, and he's gonna dust off the cape and cowl to take this alien down. Like, yes, that's it, that you found the perfect way in. That's the door to go in. But
It is Zack Snyder directing.
Yes, it is Zack Snyder directing, and there are just too many other things going on in this trailer that sort of eclipse that promise of like, oh, okay, you found like the concept, you found the way in.
Because I feel like that's kind of the trap that we fell into for the Man of Steel trailers. Like, oh, they're going to take this. I mean, like when the Man of Steel trailer came out and it had like the two voiceovers from, you know, each of Superman's fathers, it's like, oh, it could have this new, interesting, in-depth look.
It was so good. Like, yeah, it was like, oh, this is going to be like, man, there was like this weird indication. It's like, this might be like sort of like a heartwarming, psychological
concept look, score.
At like what it means to be Superman and like this duality. And like, you see them try to do it and it's just like, just pots and pans falling down the stairs. Like, oh God, please stop. Don't do this anymore. Just punch something. So I don't know. So how did you feel about Wonder Woman like in motion?
It was pretty cool to see.
It's weird to say that because of course we should have had many Wonder Woman movies between now and the television show, but this is the first time we've seen that character brought to life. It's just to see her sort of like alive is sort of like, yeah, that seems cool.
I kind of wasn't expecting to see her in this trailer.
Yeah, I know, me neither.
Because, you know, there wasn't a hint of her in the last one, and I wasn't sure how big a role she was going
to
have.
Yeah, I really thought that they were going to chop it down to like a cameo or something, but apparently she's fighting and all that, so.
It seems like she's in a good number of scenes.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, she appears several times in the trailer, so it did seem like she has a nice piece of the pie. So we are going to see all these movies. The difference is you're going to look forward to some of them, and I'm not. That's what we've determined. Let's talk about Fantasy Summer Box Office. Because we're not doing weekly episodes anymore. Every time we come on, we're gonna have big updates, and we got big updates. So the
game is pretty much over. That's a pretty good update.
You son of a bitch! So John had Jurassic World, which blew everyone away. I think we mentioned that in our Hannibal episode. No one predicted Jurassic World would do over 200 million domestic opening weekend, but it did, 209, and really the death stroke here with John's card is Minions, which I know nothing about. It's an animated film, a sequel for Despicable Me, 116 million domestic. That's two triple figure.
Do it all along.
Yeah, that's and only that, but you pick Tomorrowland as a bomb, which is a great bomb pick. You have 441 points right now, which is like one of the highest.
That's got some sort of Tisby record.
Yeah, that's one of the highest scores we've seen. Now, you picked second. Jeff picked first, and his card is also done right now. He picked Avengers Age of Ultron first, 188. Very good, respectable. Then he chose Magic Mike and Ted 2. Magic Mike did 13 opening weekend. Ted 2 did 36. I mean, those are very cool numbers. And what killed him was that he picked Jurassic World the bomb, which I couldn't blame him at the time. But now, looking back, I mean, we've never clocked a zero for a bomb pick. But Jeff, Jurassic World made more in its opening weekend than it did that it cost.
Could have happened to anyone, Jeff.
So, yeah, it could have happened to anyone. So that is our very first bomb pick that clocked the goose egg. So, Jeff, congrats. You broke the record. Let's see. Michelle chose Terminator Genesis as a moneymaker and as a bomb pick. It was sort of, it did not do well, but it didn't cost like an insane amount of money either. So she's, you know, with Inside Out, which was 90, which is a really good score, she's at 200. Kristen has the most to see yet. She's got Fantastic Four. She's got Paper Towns, which is like a teen movie, I believe. And she chose Ant-Man to bomb. I don't know how that's going to work out. And I've been out of this game for a long time. I am waiting for Mission Impossible and Straight Outta Compton to come out. Both of those are not going to put me in any sort of contention, even for second place, I don't believe. My Mad Max Fury Road choices as Bomb.
You got burned on that one, man. You should have gotten more.
Yeah, man. Mad Max lost to, like, Pitch Perfect 2. Like, I didn't... Mad Max had the Prometheus problem. I made the same mistake twice, where it's, like, online, it's, like, gonna be the biggest thing, but, like, in reality,
right,
is not actually a thing. So that's what happened.
It was rated R movies, man. You gotta be careful.
Yeah. God damn it. Yeah, I really fucked that up. I picked the last, though. I didn't have a lot on the table. So I guess I could have picked Minions. I didn't know that was going to be a thing. But other than that, there aren't a lot of other picks that I see I could have taken that would have changed my card. But John, you deserve a lot of credit here. Traditionally, and this is a problem with the game, but you know, a lot of times the person who picks first wins. But you pick second, and... it's really, I think, that second money-making pick. If you can make that really, just really, really good, you're in really good shape. And you got three figures out of Minions. A couple of years ago, I did that with Fast and Furious. I got like 90-something out of my second pick.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Iron Man 3 as well. And that just put me over the top. So you are in that position right now. And it doesn't look like anyone is going to touch you. I'm going to stop short of calling it right now, because there are actually, you know, it's mid-July, so we're only halfway through it. So we're going to see how this plays out. But unofficially, John, you look unbeatable right now. So if you want to take a little bow for that, you know, a sip of your wine. Yeah, feels good. Awesome. Let's end this episode the way we end every episode with a very quick Geek of the Week. John and I have both been to Comic-Con. Obviously, we couldn't fit in everything that we did into our little segment, but maybe there's something else. John, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it super brief with the books that I bought for the plane.
okay, cool.
The plane, the 5.5-hour plane ride back. I bought Superman for All Seasons, which is by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
Yes.
Awesome, very... very classy Superman book. And then Punk Rock Jesus, by written and drawn by Sean Murphy, which is one of my favorite artists. And that was a good, like, that's another one of those really good, like, independent books where it's not a superhero story, but it's just like a suit. It's really, like, different and well-written and well-put-together and well-executed concept, which basically the story is, it takes place in the future, and this TV network creates a clone of Jesus from the Shroud of Turin and creates this big, like, Truman Show type reality show around it. And then once he sort of grows into an adult and realizes what it is, he rejects it and, you know, becomes a, joins a punk rock band or forms a punk rock band or something like that. I haven't finished it yet. I'm like 3/4 of the way through it, but it's really great so far.
And
so that's what I got.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you were able to pick up some actual comics at Comic-Con. I did the same, actually. I picked up some Silver Age Marvel stuff for my Thunderbolts collection. But what was really cool, my favorite comic from last year, at least, The Superior Foes of Spider-Man. I brought my number one to Comic-Con because I knew that the co-creator and artist of that series, Steve Lieber, was there. In the artist alley, I was able to catch up with him a little bit, and he signed it for me, did a little sketch of the Boomerang character right on the with his signature. So that was awesome. He was very, very nice, very down to earth. And also, a little bit of our own Tisby news, he or whoever runs his website linked my little write-up of the whole Superior Foes series and put me right at the tippity-top in that list.
Check that out. We're officially, Tisby is officially legitimate.
My career as a comic critic has really blossomed. Thank you to the Steve Lieber, whoever's running his site, his team. I know he works at Periscope Studios. I don't know how that works over there, but thanks for that shout out. That was very, very nice to see. That was great. And yeah, That's Geek of the Week. John, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at John Straub.
You can find me on Twitter as well at Heroes Are Boring. And you can find us, our podcast on Twitter at Tisby Podcast. That's TISB Podcast. You can find us at TisbyCast.com for our official site. We find all our episodes and all our comic criticisms and all that such. Yeah, and that's it. But thanks for joining us for this very special Comic-Con edition. Jeff usually yells something out, and we're the quiet ones, John.
Every year on Sunday night when the show closes, an announcement comes over that we as exhibitors who are working at the show and have been on our feet for 5 straight days comes over, and when we hear that, it's just the greatest thing ever. It comes over the intercom, sounds like this. Attention Comic-Con attendees, the exhibit floor is now closed. We hope you've enjoyed your Comic-Con 2015. See you again next year.
It's also exciting. Creepy, too. I feel like if like you pulled a string on a doll or something, that's what it would say. Like
exactly what it sounds like.
He knows we're going to be there next year. It's scary. I don't want to think about that.
This is serious business.
Tell me your fantasy, John.